Good morning, afternoon, and good evening, everybody. Welcome to the Eric Anders Lang Show. I'm your host. I am that man. I am that guy. Today we've got a show for you that I've been looking forward to for a great many afternoons, evenings, months, weeks, years. We're going to interview Bob Colfer. That name may mean nothing to you right now, but it will in a short few minutes because I'm going to introduce him. And when I introduce him, I'm going to tell you that he has edited every episode of Adventures in Golf. And in some ways, he is just as much Adventures in Golf as this curly little weirdo myself. Bob has edited all of the episodes, and we have developed this wonderful conversation over the years of working together. And I've wanted to do a podcast with him for so long. And, you know, it's just whether it's been schedule or what, but now finally we have figured out how to do it and when to do it. And it is today. The moment is the moment that it will be happening. And you'll see, you'll hear, because we didn't really videotape this podcast, but I'm going to also, before we introduce Bob, we've got a great 45-minute discussion with him. I've already had it, obviously. I don't usually do this. I don't usually record the intro after I do the meat. That's kind of like eating the steak and then having the salad for dessert. If you know me, you know I just run into everything head first, full speed, no helmet. And that explains my poor memory, my lack of judgment, and I was going to say something very personal, but the fact that I'm 39 and doesn't have kids has nothing to do with it. I've got a dog, so he may not be my child, but he is close. Before we introduce Bob and everything that he's done for Adventures in Golf and Scratch and, you know, our lives and the lives of the people sitting on United Airlines, special thanks to them, not only for their help with Adventures in Golf, but also they started flying around volunteers for free, absolutely free, which I think is just amazing. I'm getting excited to buy tickets for season 5. I'm getting excited to start thinking about the travel for that, starting to feel like maybe that's going to be soon. But then again, soon is a relative term, as some would say. So before I introduce Bob, I'm going to get a couple questions out of the way. These are questions that if you responded to the Scratch TV, the Scratch social handles, these are general questions that are being answered. I'm going to do since the interview with Bob was so good and so thoughtful, I'm going to just answer a handful of questions now and then take a quick commercial break, and then we'll get into Bob's interview. And then I'm going to do another episode of just Q&A because there are so many good questions, and I really want to dig through all of them. So without further ado, what adventure has been my favorite so far? Well, that's a very hard question to answer. I think Bob and I both agree in the feeling that Askernish, the season opener for 2, definitely had a lot of the elements of true adventure. And in that sense, that would take the cake for me. Also, Askernish is kind of one of those episodes that I could actually refer you to. If you said, which episode should I actually go on? Askernish is a good choice because it's like really, you know, it's a golf course. It's a golf destination. It's a history lesson. It is an adventure. It is wild. It is out there. So that really fits the bill for me, obviously. There are other episodes that I enjoy more. Mira is a great flowing episode, and Bob even has some interesting insights on that episode as we get into that. What is your personal favorite golf story? It's a tough question. I should have pre-screened these. What's your favorite personal golf story? I see. Now I get it. What's my favorite personal golf story? It would really be my trip to Ireland with my family. my mom and dad said, hey, Eric, we'd like to come play golf with you. This was 3 years ago. And we'd like to play at Bandon. And I said, okay, I'd just been to Bandon. And I said, okay, well, you know what? It's harder to get to Bandon than it is to get to Ireland. Let's go to Ireland. And we all went out there. And I love Bandon, and I'll go there as many times as I can every year. But I figured they had already been. And I have this role in my life where I really push my parents to try new things, right, Mom and Dad? They, like all of us, are creatures of habit, and I do like to, I also am a creature of habit, and I've learned this as I get older. But I think when I was a bit younger, I felt guilty for doing the same things over and over. But now, as I'm older and I just want to come home and have something that I can understand and expect and not be let down by, I just like to go to the same places over and over. I don't really try new restaurants as much as I did. But also, a great part of my life is trying new things, whether I like it or not, because I haven't been to any restaurants in Buenos Aires or Mumbai. And so it's sort of like the familiar upon returning home is key. But anyway, I said, why don't we just go to Ireland? I mean, I wanted to go for a while. And so we went. We had my friend Simon Holt, connoisseur golf tours, and wonderful gentleman out of Edinburgh. Simon put together a little itinerary for us, and we all chipped in. And me, my brother, my father, and mother all went over, and we got a house in Shannon. It wasn't in Shannon. We flew into Shannon, and our house was in started with a K. Can't remember. Where the fuck was that town? Pause. I gotta remember this. Hang on. Got it. Killarney. Killarney was the name of the town. Yep. Flew into Shannon, went to Killarney. Anyway, we're talking about my favorite personal golf story. And really, it was this wonderful thing where we had a little nest. We had an Airbnb in Killarney, and each course was like average an hour. Some were 30 minutes, some were 2 hours from the house. And we played 36 a day, more or less. We played I threw Hogshead in last minute, played Waterville, Trolley, Dukes, played all of them. Had just a fantastic time. Really just enjoyed ourselves, and we had dinner every night together, and we had a little rental car, and we drove around, and the weather was good and bad, and of course, this included Old Head. And if you haven't heard me talk about Old Head, go to my Instagram and check that out. It's really a personal time for me. Really, there are some special moments. I can't tell the story again right now. Okay, guys, we've been recording too long. Any hints on where the next season will take us? That's a good question. South America. This is all pending, obviously. But South America, England, Germany, Vietnam, Korea, England. Did I say England already? America, Alabama, New York, Connecticut, Texas. Those are obviously subject to change at any minute. Rules and regulations do apply. Kids get in free. No one under 18 admitted, folks. How do you come up with the locations you visit? Have you ever taken a fan recommendation? Yes, we have taken a fan recommendation. That was Sheep Golf from Bal Hepburn up in Minnesota there. And that was a wonderful episode that was recommended to us. And, we've done a lot of research over the years that has held on to kind of what would fit. And the truth is, I'll say this in the Mura ep, when later on we talked to Bob, I mean, the Mura episode was planned out for years, and it was a timing thing. We couldn't go until season 3, but we had wanted to go in season 1. It just, the timing didn't work out. And the truth is, it was better that we waited. That episode really was benefited by the time that we spent for the first 3 seasons learning about how to make this show. And, you know, the show has really gone through a lot of different transitions. So it's exciting to see that. As someone who's constantly traveling for work, although fun work, I imagine, how do you decide where to vacation? Great, great question. You know, I don't go on vacation. I don't find traveling relaxing. So for me, it would be very rare for me to say I'm going to go to Hawaii for a week or I'm going to go to Mexico for a week. If I want to take time off, I stay home. I just go to my house and I kind of just lay low. That is exotic for me. Obviously now we're in the midst of a bit of a different scenario. But I'm, you know, I wanted to slow the pace down a little bit. So that's kind of good. Favorite public course in LA besides Roosevelt? Rustic Canyon, my guy. I mean, it's not a muni, but it's a very, very good public course. You know, top ranked actually in America. Any hints on, okay, what's the funniest story on course that's happened throughout the years? Oh, geez. Funniest story on the golf course. I mean, guy, there's just too many. I mean, hit the vlogs for me, my guy. Like, there's so many funny-isms on the golf course. I mean, I'm blanking right now. I have a terrible memory also. That's one of the things. You know, with hanging out with Stewart and Colt for Scotland and Hafer, that was some of the funniest times of my life. Adventures in Golf is fun, but it's not like funny. It's like actually quite stressful because we're like really involved. Well, actually, that's not true. Safari Golf from season 4 was hilarious. There was one point where we could not stop laughing. I can't remember why. Oh, we were in the pro shop. I wonder if we made it into the vlogs. We were in the pro. I forgot. Oh my gosh. We were in the pro shop and there's this painting of a golf hole. And right in the foreground of the green, there's like three hyenas like growling, like snarling at the viewer. And I've never seen anything like that. And it just, I couldn't do a take without laughing. Okay, this is the last question, then we'll get into Bob's interview. And then what I'll say is I'm doing a new thing. I'm giving out my phone number. So text me with any questions that you have about Adventures in Golf, and I'll get to it next week. As I said, I've already got a lot of questions from my own social, but if you really want to get your question answered, hit me up 323-310-3988. Again, that's area code 323-310-3988. That's my number. The texts are from me. Text that number. Just say, you know, what I've heard on the podcast, and then you'll get like an auto reply that you just got to fill, like just respond to that, and then we can text and, you know, you can get updates and stuff like that. So hit me up with any questions on that number. Text me. Last answer here for this is, you've mentioned before that you didn't get into golf until like 30. Why the late start and what piqued your interest to get started? Okay, well, here's what's up. I was watching the Masters 1997 tonight. They put it up there, and you know, it's Bobby Clampett, it's David Faraday, it's Peter Costas, it's all these dudes, and this is 97, so this is long before I'm into golf. At this time I'm 16 years old, and I didn't get into golf until I was 30, so that's, I'm already 40 now, 39. So anyway, I went through most of my life thinking that I'm, one, not a golfer, because two, I hate golf and I hate golfers. And when I watched, and obviously now I've played golf for 10 years, I love golf, I love golfers, I now understand the dress code, I understand the tradition, I respect the Masters very much, I'm a big fan, I'm a patron, I'm a lover of almost everything in golf, almost everything. There's a few things I don't like, and the things that I don't like, the biggest things I don't like are general. It's this PR problem, and it goes back to kind of this idea that in every movie, what does the villain do? They play golf. They love golf, and that's the problem. We need to make golf more welcoming. But that's not any one entity's fault. It's individuals. It's each of us one on one for not making it more welcoming. So I challenge all of you, all three of you, my parents, and the one person listening. Please wave to someone from another fairway. See how it goes. They may not wave back, but that's not your concern. Anyway, I thought I hated golf. I wasn't into it. And I looked at the 97 Masters tapes, and that's kind of the reason I wasn't into it. It didn't have style. It didn't have pizzazz. It didn't have flair. It didn't have personality, really. At least now, even when I watch golf tournaments, there's a little more to it. It's gotten cooler. I mean, we can talk about golf broadcasts for a long time. But anyway, my brother finally he was inviting me to play golf all the time. And, you know, he finally got through to me when I was 30. He invited me to play. And the shortest, simplest version of the story is I put on my little golf glove. I put on some khakis and a little collared shirt. And I had some Vans on, and I put on a hat. And then I had this little 3-wood on the tee, and I just sort of like I felt kind of cool. Like I liked the outfit, actually. It kind of fit me well. It was a red golf shirt with khaki pants. I looked pretty good. I actually have a photo of it. And I just was a baseball player when I was a kid, and I just kind of stood up there and teed the ball up. Probably teed it up like an inch and a half, even with my 3-wood, and didn't know anything. And took the club back, ran through it, and I hit the ball. And I hit it pretty good. And it was like really instantaneous. Love at first sight. I fell in love with it to a degree that it would sustain the next 10 years of my life. So that's how I fell into golf, guys. I hope that you stick around, listen to the interview with Bob. Got a couple ads coming through from our partners. Make sure to support everybody who supports what we do, and make sure to text me, and let's catch up next week on a full Q&A pod of all detailed adventures in golf questions, general questions, whatever you want. We're going to go big on it. Thanks, everybody. Have a great week, and enjoy the interview with Bob. He's a great guy. All right, everybody. Every minute, the equivalent of one dump truck of plastic enters our oceans. That's 60 dump trucks a minute. Okay. That's 1,200. 1,320? That doesn't sound right. Thousands of dump trucks every day. Plastic enters the oceans. This plastic doesn't just, gotta get my glasses on, affect marine life. It ends up in our food as microplastics. Plastic is a problem. That's why Adidas is aiming to end plastic waste by 2024. Wow. That's incredible. You mean within their own company, not within the world. 100% of Adidas products. Yeah, okay. Problem solved. 100% of Adidas products will be made by recycled polyester by 2024. That's rad because I use a water bottle, folks. I know that Adidas doesn't make it, but it's not. Plastic water bottles are just, they're bad. I mean, sometimes you got to do it, but they're bad. Adidas Golf is doing their part this week by introducing the limited edition Prime Blue Code Chaos footwear for both men and women, made in part with I just had some pretzels and ginger beer. Okay, in part with Parley Ocean Plastic. The recycled yarns in the footwear are made from plastic that was collected from beaches and coastal communities, preventing it from entering our oceans. From problem to performance, pick up your pair now at adidas.com. For more info about the latest products from Adidas Golf, go to adidas.com and throw Adidas Golf and follow on Instagram and Twitter. Precision Pro, folks. I'm going to do an ad-libbed Precision Pro read. Here's the thing about Precision Pro. They're made by some great guys in Cincinnati, Ohio. It's got great design. And coming out soon, you're going to get a very special colorway of the NX9 Pro with slope. Is that right? That's it. I got a thumbs up in the studio here that's the exact rangefinder. Not only do you get free battery replacement for life, but you get slope and you get laser. I mean, it is a laser. Laser sharp accuracy. And you get, I don't know, you just get to be part of something cool that I'm down with. So Precision Pro is great. Obviously, the family there in Cincinnati makes them good. We did an RGC there. If you haven't seen it, check out the video on the YouTube channel. We gave everybody a rangefinder. But stay tuned. Coming around April, we're going to be releasing a random golf club version of this rangefinder. It is the most beautiful rangefinder I've ever seen on planet Earth. And I haven't traveled any other planets yet. I've done a lot of countries and states and towns, continents, hemispheres, but I've never left the planet. And I was just talking to someone who said that that's on their bucket list. It's not on mine. I don't share that. But on this planet, the Random Golf Club Rangefinder will literally blow your mind, but it won't blow your wallet. The Rangefinder for everyone, people. Enjoy it. All right, I'm going to catch me now. We got... give me a second, all right? I'm about to do an ad read for Vice Golf. I don't even have a read, so this is an ad lib. This is an ad-libbed read. Anyway, Vice Golf, you all know I love the brand. They make a great golf ball, and there are things that I would tell you in person about the golf ball that I can't tell you in a public forum. But basically, the golf ball is amazing. Technically speaking, on test, it performs as good or better than what we call, quote, the best golf ball on tour. Now, the Vice Golf Ball also has one cool thing, which is that it's cool. Obviously, the scripting is really sweet. But beyond that, it has another cool thing. I'm going to keep pulling cool things out of this ball. The second cool thing is that you can't get it in a pro shop. So go online, go to vicegolf.com, and get your slick balls. They've got all different types. They've got the tour, they've got the drive, they've got the pro, they've got the pro plus, they've got different colors, and you can also personalize less than, you can personalize, I don't know what number you can personalize, but you can personalize them, whereas other brands don't let you personalize them except for once a year. So check out vicegolf.com, get yourself some smooth and cool balls for the course, that is. Anyway, y'all, see you in the showers until the next ad read. All right, one more ad read. I'll probably do another one after this. Jones Sports Co., folks. If you want the bag that I rock, it's the Jones Sports Bag. They got the Player Series. They got the original. What are the other? What's the other models they got? The stand bags? We're pulling it up in the studio, folks. But here's the thing. Jones, if you haven't seen the video on YouTube yet, please check it out. We went up there, visited with them. We designed a lot of cool stuff. We're going to be designing more stuff. We have two bags on the Random Golf Club site that have the Random Golf Club script on it. The Utility Trooper is the info I'm getting of the name of the other bag that I like. It's got the stand bag. I mostly rock the original, which is based on a design from the 70s. Was his name Jones? His name was Mr. Jones? Mr. Jones and me. Now, that guy got in a lot of trouble for some, what's that? Taxi cabs. But the guy who sang the song, Mr. Jones, he's gotten a lot of trouble. Don't want to talk about him. But Mr. Jones, not that the song is written about, was a taxi driver in New York. He made a golf bag out of the upholstery in his taxi. And that's where Jones has come from. So they're obviously the comfortable shoulder strap on the original series is what I love. Got a lot of cargo space, and you got three pockets to hold all your clubs. And you look basically like a badass. If you don't have a significant other at the start of the round, you will have one at the end. Am I right? Watch out. It's you know, that's the studio here says, get a Jones bag. I'm not going to say get laid, but basically that's what's going to happen. I mean, I didn't say it. You said it. You heard it. I didn't say it. Jones Sports Co., everybody. Love them. TaylorMade, folks. I got to tell you, the first golf clubs that ever went in my little old hands were TaylorMade Burner Oversize. They had some crusty old grips that I redid myself, at risk of my own fingertips with the razor, and I got high because I don't know if you've ever re-gripped your clubs, but you become an inhalant addict because you're putting like really noxious stuff. Don't grip your own clubs unless you really want to. Anyway, mad respect. Give me a fist bump whenever I see you. I grip my own clubs. I put the grips on them myself. I say, how much did you say? I mean, you could save money. You save money because I think you put them on. It's like $20 each, and you buy the grips yourself. It's like $8. By the way, regripping 14 clubs, I mean, that's like a lot. Go buy TaylorMade's instead. They come with grips. My favorite TaylorMade edition now, obviously the Sim Max I'm playing, is a monster club. One of the many things Tiger Woods have and I in common is playing the Sim. But also, I kind of love the wedges. The raw-faced wedges, MG. I both love the high toe in matte black. I also have a matte black shaft. I know you didn't ask, but I went ahead and told you. Anyway, TaylorMade, my favorite thing about TaylorMade beyond the incredibly performing equipment is the people that make this company up. The band of brothers down here, the band of sisters, the family in Carlsbad really, really gets behind what we do, and that means it's important for you to get behind what they do. So go support TaylorMade, everybody, and hit them straight or just don't. Just hit them with TaylorMade's, though. Just stop messing around with all the others. Hit them straight with TaylorMade, but just hit TaylorMade at least. I mean, just go. I mean, what are you doing? Just pause the pod. Go on TaylorMade. What's their website? They don't even need a website. Just go find TaylorMade ASAP. There should be what? What I play? I play the okay. Studio is asking me to play. I play the P760s, 4 through pitch. Then I've got the milled grind raw face 50, 54, and 58. And then I rock. I'm in between the Gapper and the Sim Hybrid right now. I play the 2 Gapper. I've got a steel shafted 6.5 Project X in that one, as with all the irons. And then on the driver, I have the Sim Max with a 9 degree. I'm still working on getting my numbers on that. I don't really know. I got the 10.5 and the 9. We're going to do a little experimentation. Maybe, honestly, you know what? Whatever one I don't use, how about it's yours? How about that? I don't know how we're going to manage this. Head over to the Instagram account. Get ready for the old giveaway of the driver that I can't hit. Anyway, TaylorMade's the family, folks. All right. So Bob, I don't even know where to start with everything we've accomplished and really only being in the same room. How many times? 3 times? 4 times?
Yeah, if that.
Were you in the you were in that first meeting, weren't you?
Yeah, I mean, before the first Adventures in Golf kind of happened.
Yeah, we were in there with Stefan.
Stefan, yep.
Stefan and the Sports Rocket team, and I mean, it was like 6 people, and you were in there, and do you remember that particular meeting where I was? First of all, I don't know if you were aware. I had no idea what I was doing there.
Right. I didn't know. I don't think I have that one particular memory, because I think at the time it was very much like, oh, this is going to happen. And it was like, okay, fine, let's see it happen. And we'll worry about that. You know, a lot of the things that we were doing at the time, it was very much cross that bridge when we get to it kind of thing. So, you know, and from my perspective as an editor, you can talk about all the pre-production till the cows come home, but until I have the footage in my hands, then that's when it means something to me.
Right. And so, yeah, and you probably also couldn't tell maybe by looking at me that I had, one, you know, no idea what I was doing, two, really didn't know what I was doing, and wasn't ever really, you know, I guess the interesting thing for me to look at as it relates to our collaboration is, I mean, there's so many interesting things, but from the beginning, I never wanted to be on camera. And I guess I'm curious to know, as like, you know, I mean, you're we have such an unwritten dialogue in how we kind of work together and communicate through footage.
Right.
You know, was that ever, how do you see that progression?
Well, I mean, in the beginning, I can honestly say that, you know, when I was handed all of the footage, because it's going back to Scotland, you know, and you sift through hours upon hours upon hours, and then Stefan's like, all right, now make something of this. You kind of just look at it and say, oh, all right, I see it's in, you know, it's kind of the way it goes. So you look at all the footage and you get a sense. I mean, even back then, I could tell, sure, maybe you were pretty green, but you did have a sense of, like, beats, story beats, and how you sort of wanted things to go. So it was really just a matter of assembling that all together in a way that made sense, and then, you know, putting in some music and chopping out a lot of the things that kind of fell flat, I guess. You know, I mean, it's just going to happen. Eventually, you're going to get out there, you're going to do your thing, and some things just don't work. And then, you know, thankfully, really, everybody kind of looked at it and said, oh, This is good. You know, we got something here. Let's move this into the next 9 countries or whatever it was after that.
Yeah, this is not terrible. That was shocking. <to that. laughs> I guess I don't know if how your memory serves you based on that first episode, but you know, I shot that with a paparazzi photographer and a philosophy major. And we had 7 days, and I can't even imagine the amount of footage that you have. And really, at that time, Stefan, who was the executive producer, I guess, he's not with us anymore as far as the company's concerned.
Right.
He's working for someone else. But he was really pushing us, as I remember, towards longer content. you know, 20, yes. 10 well, and that 20 was, and 30 minutes.
That was very helpful at the time, again, talking about how much footage there was. So, you know, being able to really just throw it all out there and make it as long and not worried about, you know, at the time I was on a daily basis working with a lot more of the social cuts of, you know, sports and things. And so everything had to be 30 seconds, a minute, minute and a half seemed outlandish. And here we are putting together this piece that, like, I think the first cut was probably like 15 minutes. Which, you know, I know a lot of fans of AIG now are always touting longer, longer, and we've sort of gone that route. But in the beginning, you know, we've got an untested thing, and we're throwing this out there. 15 minutes just was, it was a lot to go on. So I think we might have trimmed it down to 12 and a half or so, and it worked.
You know, you bring up the audience idea, and I'll share my experience, which was, I think it was on the eve of producing season three, and I was kind of disenchanted with everything. I didn't really want to make Adventures in Golf anymore. I was kind of just not. It was a difficult time in my life for many reasons, but I just was kind of out on it, you know. And I was like, you know, I'd rather just go do something else, because I was a filmmaker at heart. I didn't really want to be on camera. I didn't really care about golf in the same. I mean, I loved it, but I didn't come to golf and say, let's make golf videos. I came to golf and said, let's play golf. And something happened where I was at the PGA show, and someone came up to me and said, I really like Adventures in Golf. Thank you for making it. It this and that. It did something for me. And all of a sudden, it like completely gave me a 180. And I thought, whoa, wait, this show has people that watch it. Because aside from that experience of one-on-one, it was just numbers to me. And ultimately, I think season one and two, let's not be coy, they underperformed. We thought, oh, geez, no one's watching this. Like, nobody cares. And then it just took time, and people did get involved. But that one-on-one experience came to me, and I was wondering, has the audience of Adventures in Golf taught you anything, you know, in your life, whether it's been one-on-one or even just through the comments or, you know, in their viewing habits?
I suppose, I mean, I was grateful to see that there was sort of an acceptance of things being longer, which was great because, you know, when we dive into putting these together, you know, the first cut, I call it, it's the kitchen sink cut. You know, it's got everything in it, every last little piece usually. And then we sort of take that from and sculpt it down and mold it into what it ends up being. You know, and I'm not going to lie, sometimes things don't make it. Just because either the timing or it just was like we might be missing an element. And sometimes it's sad because, like, I kind of really like that element. But it's nice to know, like, that kind of I don't want to say that anything we put out there they're going to love, because obviously that's not the case. But I know that there's definitely been, in my opinion, the more work we put into it, the better they are received, which kind of seems like a no-brainer. But like you said, for the first couple seasons, this was just a thing that we were doing. You know, it was a job. This was pretty cool. Who's not going to like going around the world and putting some videos together? But I think, yeah, there was that turning point where it was like, no, we need to really start taking this a little bit more serious than we were previously, because there is a following and it does mean something to people. And I think we sort of sculpted the series a little bit to represent that.
Yeah, and then that's a really interesting point that you raised, that it's almost like we just started walking, and then all of a sudden we turned around and we're like, oh my goodness, like, we're actually going somewhere. We should in a sense take this more seriously. Are you, when you say the word seriously, are you meaning like narratively being more serious? Because I have experienced that as we get into season 3 and 4, it's like I'm not trying to crack jokes as much, and
absolutely,
and I don't. What do you see that as?
Yeah, I mean, the first season especially, there was a lot more of the one-on-one sort of the being coy and sort of trying to make something out of nothing, when, you know, instead of just letting things happen naturally. You know, I'm a big fan of, you know, I know you make fun of yourself for it, that you, a lot of times you try not to put a lot of production thought ahead of time. You like to just go into these things and see what happens. And I have to admit, in the beginning, it was frustrating because I, you know, here I am putting everything together and I'm saying, wait, how do you not have a plan? This doesn't work this way. Produce something. What's happening? But, you know, you sort of evolved into adding sort of an overall structure that you wanted. And then, but still just letting that happen naturally, letting things kind of take place. You know, if the name of the show is Adventures in Golf, and that really makes that happen, because I think if you did too much ahead of time and you were talking to people on phones and saying, all right, you know, this is what we want to talk about, then that just kind of shuts those people, their brains down, because now they're thinking about, oh, I had this phone call with Eric and this is what we want to talk about. It's like, no, none of that. Just it all goes away because you're just there, you're interacting with them and letting things happen. And sure, you know, maybe there's 5, 6, 10 hours of footage to go through, but it allows us to get those real moments, and that's everything.
You know, it's so interesting because I've never really realized that aspect that, you know, you know your progression there as far as planning and improvisation. I think, you know, when I look at it now, it's like I actually feel like in the beginning, when we would sort of arrive at a location, I'd be filled with anxiety. And I'd be filled with uncertainty about what are we going to shoot? What are we going to do? What's going to happen? And the truth is, like in season one, a lot of those bits are relatively planned out. Like even in Thailand, when I put on the Masters shirt in the locker room, like that was like, we thought about that and we talked about it and, you know, or, you know, countless examples. But now it's like, I feel like not just you and I, but me and David and Stuart, you know, everyone involved really, it's like, we all kind of know what needs to happen, and it's kind of like, you know, a tight military team where we just sort of are like, okay, cool. We're going to do that. That's fine. Yeah. We can do that. And, that's kind of the interesting thing to see, that then it feels like we're able to focus more energy on things that are more complicated. Like, I guess I'd like to ask you about Cape Town because, you know, do you see Cape Town being a unique episode out of the 40 or so that you've cut?
I mean, as far as what? As far as what angle are you coming from? I mean, there's Cape Town. There's an example of things that we couldn't really talk about or we wanted to sort of shy away from. I mean, you had a lot of stuff going on in Cape Town that didn't make the cut because it just
wasn't. You mean the robbery?
Yes, that.
We like, got
that's,
robbed.
That's a great story, but, you know. Unfortunately, we have to sort of toe the line as far as things go when it comes to, you know, sponsors and other executives, but that would have been fun to cut, you know, even as a behind the scenes kind of thing, but you know.
I knew that wasn't going to, I didn't even shoot that much of it because I just knew it wasn't going to make the cut. But even, no, I mean Cape Town as far as, you know, and maybe you didn't see it as much because I guess the big thing now is, you've in the beginning, I would just kind of send you footage with absolutely no information. Is that
yes.
really what happened?
I'm aware. Yes.
So tell.
Or actually, I would get information. You know, you would shoot something. Let's just say you would shoot something in February, and we'd finally start getting around to the episode in June, July, and you'd write up something based on, you know, memories from months ago on how you think it should go, and you know, and everybody, it's Monday morning quarterbacking. You think you've got all this amazing stuff in your mind, but then you look at what we have, and they don't always match up.
They don't. And I guess if you're listening and you're wondering how, you know, because like I said, you're in New York, I'm in LA, we send a hard drive off. You know, this is a true collaboration in that sense. And that's probably one of the reasons why I'm so proud of Adventures in Golf and why it's so special and unique is that, you know, editing is in a lot of ways, if you're listening and you don't realize, if you're not a filmmaker yourself, you may not understand how much I truly respect a person like Bob, because it's not a task that you're doing. It's not like you're an editor in the sense of like, okay, organize this footage. No, you are quite literally telling the story. You're choosing the music. You're writing the voiceover, and people might not realize how big that is. Right? I mean, you're essentially directing half of the project, and in some sense, it's the half that people actually see. You know, and so I can't remember where I was going with this, but it was the idea of what I learned over the years to ultimately supply you with, which was when we finish shooting, and really you can't do it before because this is a true documentary show. We don't quite know what we're going to find, but I started recording like a 5 or 10 minute audio note that as soon as we wrap production on one episode, I'll write a letter to you verbally. And is that seems like it's helped you a lot.
It's helped, you know, if nothing else, it gives me the proper mindset of what, you know, where you think things are going and how you think things should sort of fit into the episode, which, you know, just from basic structure of a piece is great. You know, sometimes it doesn't work out, but at least I know at any given time where your head is at. Because again, you know, you're miles away from me, and I can't always just call you up and say, "Hey, what were you thinking here?" I mean, granted, we could text and email, but when you're in the moment of editing the piece, it kind of, for me, it's always been about sort of just getting something together. You know, I've been editing for many years, and I've sort of tried to get as much of my ego out of things as possible, so that I can just get something together, put it out there, and then work from that point. Because again, with the amount of hours of footage that is shot, it's really not practical and efficient in any way to go back and forth and back and forth with, well, what do you think of this and what do you think of that? It's better for me, and I think overall process, to just get it out there and then work off of that. And, you know, you usually come back with some great notes of, oh, you know, well, I shot this and we spoke to this and this would work great here. And then it evolves from there. But at least we've got a good starting point. And those audio notes really do make a huge difference in that, to make sure that things happen as efficient as we can.
We should... I should find a suitable audio note that's not filled with F-bombs, and maybe I should tag one of those on at the end of this, because they are pretty enlightening. And I think, you know, it's funny, sometimes what I'll do is, since so much time usually passes between when we shoot something and when you begin editing it and when it airs, I kind of forget. So much has happened in between, you know, and like we'll shoot an episode in Norway, and then I'll watch the edit in another country, you know, 4, 3, 6 months later, and it's like my mind is just in a completely different place. I'll see if I can find a couple audio notes to put out.
If not, I know I have them definitely on file if there's something you think of, but I have them here. But I think that's the interesting thing for me, is to see what you have to say about them, because I know, you know, not that it's completely, you know, out of your mind. I mean, you've experienced these things, you've gone to these places, you've talked to these people. But I know that, you know, hey, you're traveling around. You're at any given week, you could be in 5 different places. And, you know, when we're not doing adventures in golf, that is your life. So I know that by the time you do get to see these edits, I am curious to see what you think of them, because it's, I mean, for you, it has to kind of almost be surreal to be like, oh, I did that. Wait, that's me. That's my life, because so much time has passed.
I mean, if you're listening to this, to give you some more relativity here, Bob, you've sent me 40 edits over the past couple of years, and 40 not tiny edits. Well, I guess more, because you've done the behind the scenes for season 4. So,
oh yeah, the blog. You know,
it's like I can't even begin to describe the feeling of getting an edit in my inbox from you. As a, you know, I've worked with dozens and dozens of editors currently, even. We do a lot of other videos for our own channel. I pretty much get an edit from you, and very rarely do I even have a note. I mean, am I right?
Yeah. I mean, and we work really hard to make that happen, but yeah. It's, I mean, crazy. Generally speaking, any kind of notes that you come up with, they're usually pretty minute as far as, you know, maybe it's just a tiny bit of just the angle that we're coming at something from, or maybe that person said something or you said something that might not be in the best light, you know, because again, right, you are in the moment, and I know that you're sort of thinking on your feet a lot, and sometimes you just say things and you go, well, after the fact, that's maybe not that.
we tried to tone that down after Australia. I think Australia was tough because it was me, Stuart, and David in an RV. And we started just saying stuff on camera that was not, you can't air it. and that's where the sorry Bob came from.
Yes.
We never really debriefed after that. Is that funny or does it get annoying?
No, I appreciate it because, you know, again, it's almost that breaking the fourth wall with me just by myself. You know, here I am watching all of this stuff and all of a sudden you're talking to me. So it brings me into it. I feel like I'm part of whatever's happening. It's hysterical.
Like you were going to go get a coffee and then all of a sudden you're like, okay, actually I'm awake. This is fine. I'm entertained. I want to talk to you about the Mira episode. And
yes.
There's so many ways that we can talk about this episode. The first thing I want to start with is, again, I told everybody, you write the voiceover. So a lot of times when I'm speaking on Adventures in Golf, I'm actually reading words that Bob wrote. Now, more and more, sometimes it's more of a collaboration with a voice note that I send you where I'm thinking on the set, and then that comes back. And
then I try to incorporate that as much as I can, absolutely.
You do, absolutely. Well, and Lofoten's a great example of where I said, hey, man, this episode's crazy. Like, we had to drive for days to get here, and you incorporated that in the edit, which was kind of a break from normal AIG structure, kind of just a voiceover-y intro.
That one was, I will say, when I first heard the audio note and then I saw the footage, I panicked a little bit because I've come to rely on a certain aspect of, you know, I know that you're out there and you're going to talk to people and you're going to transition, really. You're going to transition somehow. Either it's going to be a stand up to camera and you're going to say, okay, this is what's happening, people. I'm doing this and this didn't work out, but we're going to take this drive and we're going to go see what this is. And then I could do a sort of little music montage to get us there. But because you had made this decision while you were there to sort of make this much more of a voiceover kind of a piece, I was pleasantly shocked because it gave me the opportunity, you know, I think especially this last season has given me the opportunity to really work on, you know, there's a lot of research. It's really strange the way we do these things sometimes because you would think all of the research that was happening would go into it beforehand. But I know that you definitely do some research before you go, but some of the specifics on things, now here you are. All right, so where is the Lofoten? When was this place created and who was involved? So now I'm doing a deep dive now into the internet and I'm finding out as much as I can to then tell that story that makes sense with the elements that you've given me. And I mean, that's actually one of my favorite pieces just based on that aspect. And, you know, I'm when I edit, I know music is a very subjective thing. And I know that some people may or may not like everybody's choice and certainly not what I've picked. But for me, editing process, music is very important. So I really spend a lot of time finding the right music to set a tone and to really move things along. And for that particular piece, whether anybody else really liked it, it was one of my favorites just all around, visually, musically, the being able to create and write all of the script and put it all together. For me, I'm most proud of that particular episode just for all of those reasons, because I think it almost has, you know, I feel like what we were saying before, I feel like I was there. Like, I feel like I was really a part of the whole process because I had to do a little extra legwork to sort of draw myself into it so that I can make sure to bring the viewer into it.
That's so interesting. And you know, that's, first of all, it's really cool to hear. I'd love to see if we could reverse engineer that in season 5 and sort of somehow, you know, create even a further, deeper, more meaningful collaboration. I guess that maybe one of the reasons why Lofoten had that experience for you is, relatively speaking, it was a thin narrative. There wasn't really anything that, quote, happened. I mean, I played golf alone, which is kind of unusual. Usually we're playing in a group. You know.
Another reason for the panic.
It was two interviews.
The original panic was because of all of that. But thankfully, again, I mean, the visuals were there. This is one of those where it was, I'm sure for you while you were there, everywhere you looked was amazing. So thankfully, everything that was shot was gorgeous. So being able to incorporate, if we didn't have that episode might have been 4 minutes long.
Well, I would say more likely if we didn't have You found a philosophical gear, and you hit that. And I remember the first time, because I get the edit, if you're listening, I get the edit back, and it's pretty rough. It's not colored. There's kind of like audio hits. It's kind of messy. And it's your voice recording the voiceover, and you have a great voice, as we all can attest. And I've actually played the edits for other people sometimes, and we should actually release a working cut where you can hear you doing the voiceover. And I played it for other people, and they say, "Wow, who's that guy doing voiceover? He's really good at voiceover." Because you do perform the voiceover. But in Norway, I remember watching the cut and saying, "Wow, Bob's like, I didn't realize that you were this. This is a different Bob than I know. He's definitely more intense."
And again, it was those audio notes that you sent me, you know, that sort of gave me the freedom to do that, because you had some basic ideas of where you wanted to go with it. So I just ran with it. You know, it could have failed miserably. You guys could have said, "No, this isn't really where we wanted to go." But I was pretty confident once I saw what came out of it that it was going to be something that everyone could look at and say, "Yeah, no, this is good."
You're not the kind of guy to, hog the stage when you receive an award. But I really do want you to try and reflect on what makes you a good editor. What makes you a great editor? I'm sorry.
Well, that's not loaded at all. Honestly, I think it kind of goes back to what I was saying earlier, is that I try to take as much of my ego out of it as possible. You know, I'm in the room by myself putting all of these things together, and it stems from, A, I love my job. I love to edit. I love to take, it's a big puzzle. I like to take all the pieces I can find and put them together and make something what is, you know, dare I say, unwatchable, just because if it's 5 hours, sure, who's going to sit down and watch 5 hours of raw footage? But in the end of it all, the standard I set is for myself. You know, I look at these pieces now because we're re-promoting, you know, the seasons now due to our current situation to get everybody psyched and out there and watching, you know, all of AIG who may have missed it in the past. And I look at the episodes, season one, season two, and I don't, there's nothing I look at and go, "Oh, what did I do there? I would do anything different." I enjoy them. I enjoy watching them. And for me, critiquing myself to say that after all this time just shows that, yeah, this is what it was supposed to be. So I kind of go into every edit with that mindset, saying, you know, I'm my own worst critic. And if I don't like what I'm doing or how it's coming, then I'm going to be the first person to point it out.
Well, yeah, I mean, I still have a few more things I want to discuss, but, you know, at that moment, it's like, I just want to say, like, you know, Adventures in Golf is a name that I came up with in a meeting before I ever knew what it was like to be on camera, but I have defined it, you know, equal parts to the way you have. So, you know, when people think of what Adventures in Golf is, they think, "Oh, it's Eric running around the world." No, it's a huge collaboration with a team of people. I mean, I remember when I saw the first episode when you put the text behind the dune.
Oh, right.
Of the title. That was when I was like, "Oh, dang. This is serious. This is real.
Yeah, this is real." We haven't done that again since then, but that's
pretty hard to do.
But yeah, that was, I mean, it's not too hard, but it requires planning ahead of time, I think. And, you know, we've got a lot going on.
Yeah, it doesn't make or break the show. But going back to Mira,
yes,
you,
Mira.
When I think of, there's a lot of people ask me what my favorite episode is, and I usually say Askernish.
That's one of my favorites too. Yep.
Why for you?
Same reason I think you're going to say. It was the most natural, weird adventure that, you know, you just stumbled upon it and it kind of happened and turned into this amazing adventure, you know. And it was also one of those fun things where I played around with the timeline a little bit. You know, a lot of the times when we put these together, it's a very straightforward, I get on a plane, I go here, I land here, I talk to this person, I go play golf, have a nice day. Whereas this one, we were kind of really just jumping around with all the different places where you were at. You hear first you started at, I guess you were in Scotland, and then you decided, "Oh, we're going to go do this," and now we're there, and then we jumped back to another place, and it was kind of all over the place, but it worked. And overall, hands down, it is certainly one of the most adventures. Just for the sake of you on camera, you guys are real. You just stumble. What do you mean? This is, well, we have to go. Can we go? Yes, let's do it. Like, that's great.
Yeah, really. It really defines the title and the series. And you know, it's funny that it's not the most successful episode. Like, that would be Prison Golf or, you know, Mira. But I guess what that's telling us more about a YouTube audience in particular.
Sure. You're
but
sure
for
not,
you and I, as
you're sure
filmmakers,
it's not Naked Golf.
Naked. I hope it's not Naked Golf. I mean, that is just that is if Sam, the GM of Scratch, said, "Okay, we want you to go do Naked Golf this season," I probably would say, "Nah." That only
I'll
could have
pass.
Happened in one or two.
Yeah.
But here's what I really. There's a thing in the Mira episode, and I've never talked to you about it.
Okay.
I don't know where it came from, and I want to understand the origin of the. For me, the episode has a crucial hinge, and the hinge is the line of VO that said, "And here's where Mira breaks from the pack." Do you know what I'm talking about?
I think so, yes.
Dude, it's when you realize, well, first of all, it's when I realize that you're a writer, and like that is a true piece of creativity of writing that I was not responsible for. I don't know where that came from, and I kind of wanted to know where that came from.
Again,
you don't remember it though.
I know I remember the line, and I can almost remember where it is in the piece. Again, it's just one of those things, because here I am. I don't really know anything about Mira. I've got all this footage. That piece actually more than any other, because of the language barrier and because of just the different angles we could have gone on that. I think that piece more than any other had the most amount of revisions and drafts. I think even before you saw it, because there were just so many things that you could have done with it. And, you know, it just took a while. I think the first couple, they just didn't feel right, you know, kind of going about it sort of the traditional route of trying to have you just show up. And it needed something. And I think where we came to that conclusion, we were able to mold it again into what we have. But I think, again, I had to research all of this, because while I may know the name, I certainly didn't know much about the history. And you know, you read things online and you get all that knowledge in, and then you have to, you know, somehow formulate it in a short, concise way. I mean, that's the thing with writing these VOs is, you know, you could read five paragraphs that all have great information online about something, and it's like, now I have to distill this into Eric's voice that makes sense. And really, you know, it can't be any more than 20 seconds worth of VO, because nobody, aside from, you know, Lofoten, nobody wants to listen to that much voiceover. They want to see the golf. They want to see the stuff and hear you speak. So really, it's just from that. It's just I absorbed all that information and come up with whatever I think I can, and as far as making sure that the VO is what it needs to be.
Yeah, there was just something about that. When I hear the breaks from the pack thing, I'm just like, oh, it gets me pumped. You know what I mean? And I don't know. It's a great moment in if I had to pick my favorite 8-second clip of Adventures in Golf, it would be that.
Cool.
Because I knew that on our end, I gave you the best footage I could possibly give you. I knew that we worked.
Oh yeah.
Constantly, and Katsuhiro would go to his forging shop at 5 a.m. and we got there 10 minutes before him every day.
Right. And well, I mean, that's one of those things. I mean, with the footage that you shot, we could have almost done which would have been interesting, really, an Adventures in Golf episode that didn't even have you in it. You know, because you followed him from the time he got there, like through the whole process almost. Granted, there would have to be a narration to sort of tell people what was happening, but not to say that you didn't need to be there, but if that could have been a way of going, that we even thought about, like, having it more of like a day in the life of Mira-san.
Well,
but
and I don't know, Bob, if you probably haven't seen any of these edits, but I've put up a few edits on my YouTube channel of what I've called them EAL classics, and it's basically, it's when I would hold the camera and I wasn't in it, and I wasn't intended to be in it. I was just right. interviewing a person. And so the idea of making a film about Mira that I'm not in is like super exciting, because that's where I used to be. Right. And me being on camera took me several years just to figure out, wait, am I supposed to make jokes? What am I supposed to do?
Right. Well, it's the documentary aspect of it. Again, you're behind the camera, you're formulating the story, and then you're going to tell it yourself. And yeah. I'm sure you would have been the person to narrate it, which works. Maybe. I mean, it's a tried and true formula. Documentaries have been doing it for years. And right. while we do adapt a lot of the documentary style, it's still you, and you're out there, and you've got the personality to be able to do a lot of things people try to do. I mean, I've seen time and time people out in the field, going to shoot something, and once you put the camera on them and they are in front of people, it doesn't go anywhere. And you've taken on that, even though you didn't want it. You've taken on that job and taken it flawlessly. You're able to just make stuff happen, and that's a huge talent, whether you know it or not, it is.
Well, you know, my trick, Bob, is that I look at the camera and I just pretend I'm talking to you.
Yeah.
It's great. No, really, I'm not completely
sorry,
kidding.
Sorry, Bob.
I'm not totally kidding. Let's talk intro really quick. So,
yes.
Ba, 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 ba. We've kind of transcended introductions. Season 3 was a dark stain. I don't know where this GoPro footage came from. I don't understand. I actually just remembered it the other day because I was rewatching the old episodes, and I said, where did this GoPro intro come from? It's just, and we don't need to talk about that. I know that it didn't come from me, and I just want to say that once and for all for anybody listening that I knew nothing about that intro, and it just made its way into an episode, and I know that, Bob, you didn't either.
I knew where it came from. I saw the process, if that's what you want to know. I mean, honestly, whether you use this or not, the long and the short of it is that's just all sponsor. That's all we've got to...
Well, no, but I love United Airlines. I'm a customer of United Airlines, but I think that... from a production standpoint, we could have done that way better, with more time. And that's kind of one of these things where yes. it's like people listening may not realize, like, hey, like each year we are faced with a problem. And the problem is you have to do all of these things and you have to make it really good and you can't spend more than this. And it's like we all start scratching our heads. And I don't know how long it takes you to edit an episode. I've never asked you, actually. How long does it take you typically? It's going to take at least a week.
From start to finish, yeah. It's within a week's time, yeah.
Yeah.
Usually
that takes an intense week.
It takes a good 3 days to actually get through everything, sync everything up, look at it all, and formulate a structure. The fourth day is pretty, by the end of the fourth day, it's usually in a pretty decent place, so that by the fifth place, I can do a little bit of, enhancing, add in some extra music and some things in my own voiceover and stuff like that, so that I'm able to then show it off. I mean, that's, just from, a scheduling yeah. issue, it has to be done, sadly, it has to be done as fast as possible, yeah. due to budget constraints and everything else. So I've gotten a pretty good system to, I would say, definitely within, a good 5 days for it to be in a good place for everybody to look at, and, we'll call it 7 for it to be 100% ready to go.
But the interesting thing about this season 3 intro is that you may notice if you compare it to the season 4 intro, which is the most current intro, the season 4 intro is like Netflix quality. I mean, like we had a tape measure.
Well, yeah, the season 4 intro really was supposed to be more of the season 3 intro. All of the footage except for one or two of those shots are actually season 3.
It's crazy. So what I guess the reason why I bring that up is, well, for two reasons. One is to let people know that I had no involvement in this GoPro cargo area, United Airlines stuff, which honestly, we did a job for United Airlines at the Genesis this year, and they said, the United Airlines executives, first of all, if I had more than two thumbs, I would give all of them up to United for being such a great sponsor. And so many people learn about our show, Bob, because they were sitting on a plane. It's just such a cool thing that, oh, you know, I found it on United Airlines. It's so cool. And anyway, we were talking to some executives, and they said, have you ever been to the hangar at LAX? And I said, no. And they said, oh, you should go. So actually, right now, you know, we were our plans were to go to Buenos Aires and focus on South America and do a couple episodes down there, which we will do, you know, in the fall now. But we were going to go to the hangar in advance of leaving for the episodes and get some footage around the planes there. And I guess, you know, I wanted to talk to you because we had spent a lot of time making the season three intro that ended up being used for season four, which I'm so grateful for. What should we do for season five as an intro? You must have some great ideas.
Oh, wow.
This is outside your department, so it's okay if you just say, my union won't allow me to comment.
Well, whatever it is, I think it needs to be, again, in sort of the vein of this last season, just in the fact that it's thought out and visually looks good. You know, whether it's even, you know, updating what you have with more of the same kind of shots, maybe not a swing, but something else, but it's the visual side of it. I mean, say what you want. This is also, you know, it's golf, but it's a travel show, and in travel shows, people want to see, they want to see the beauty. They want to see where you are. You know, is that someplace I might want to visit? How are you going to know if it's just pointing the camera at your face the whole time? We need to see where you are. So that's really what draws people in as well. So I think regardless of, you know, if you had planes in different locations, whatever it is, but being able to just see that you exist and we exist and you can go to these places, that's right. I think is a big part of it.
Okay, well, I'll think about that. That's good. And so maybe the season five opener is less about the golf, or maybe it's maybe. Well, I'll figure it out. Let's not embarrass ourselves by brainstorming in public. last thing is, you know, I get asked a lot from, you know, people that are wanting to get into filmmaking and, you know, wanting to get into, you know, making videos and specifically golf videos. You know, I think one of the things that you and I have is this kind of, we're lucky in the sense that we are both professionals in our own field and golf was always a fun thing. And I think that doesn't mean anything, first of all, because I do believe that the true essence of creativity is when you take two things that are not necessarily joined, like maybe you're a concert, you know, pianist, and then you really get, you know, you develop this fascination for fried chicken, and then you decide, I'm going to open up a fried chicken joint. And that's where true creativity comes from. You know, I don't know how those two would work together, but for me, it happened with, I love golf, and I love filmmaking, and now I'm going to put these two together. I'm not the greatest golfer, I'm not the greatest filmmaker, but I am one of, I feel like, I don't want to finish the sentence, but I feel like I am pretty good at my job right now, which is to work with you and everybody else and make shows like Adventures in Golf. But from your perspective, I wanted to know if you could talk a little bit about getting started, having advice for people who are, you know, wanting to get into making videos and they're editing their own videos. You know, I have some experience editing, so that allows me to know not only one, how great you are, but also try to arm you with the best product that I can for you to make the best product you can. Can you talk a little bit about getting started and just inspirational, you know, thoughts?
Yeah. Well, I guess I could say that we're for the past however many years, 3, 4, 5 years, you know, we live in an age where all of this has become just technologically so much easier for people to do. You know, you can go out and shoot an entire movie and edit it on your iPhone. I mean, that's, you know, 5 years ago even, that was unheard of. So you've got a lot of advantages in that area. So it's really just about harnessing all of that. And you know, I will say that it probably does help, you know, in the way like I think about things is, you know, if you enjoy what it is you're doing, then chances are other people will too. you know, I mean, obviously that's not across the board, but if you're going out there and you're passionate about anything, most of the time that passion does come through. And I think that's a big part of it. So it's just, it's trial and error, of course. You got to get out there, you got to do things, and you got to see what works and what you like and what you think, where you want to end up. But the more you do something, the better you get at it. I mean, look at, like you said, look at where you were in season one and where you are in season four. You know, I just think it's a different dynamic. It's a different beast. You're a different person, and it shows, and everything has grown, and it's gotten to this level where I think, you know, only good things can come from now.
Yeah, it's interesting to hear what you just said made me think of, well, the other thing you said, which was, you know, being your own worst critic, right, is, and without passion, you have no energy. You have no reserves of energy to be a critic, because a critic isn't a bad thing in our world. A critic is mandatory. I mean, if you're not a good critic, then you're just going to go put garbage out there and you're not even going to know. And no one's going to watch it.
Right.
But I think you and I are both have that kind of, like, it's beyond the dollar. It's about who we are. And that's why, you know, if I were to tell you how much we made on season one, it would be a number that is a negative. We lost money. Right. And luckily, you know, like, it did turn around. But I mean, there was season one was like a total joke. Like, it was like, why? And I didn't even really. But anyway, the point is that you're not going to be sustained energetically if you're not totally passionate about it, in order to go through the process of making mistakes. And, you know, I look back on even, you know, anything from a long time ago, and I'm just like, what was I thinking? You know?
Right. Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, You have to open yourself up to criticism, because it's the only way you grow. If you shut yourself down and say, I'm just going to do what I like, you know, there is that line. If you're only going to do what you like, but it's not well received, you know, it's going against what I just said technically, but, you know, you have to have that open mind to grow and to stretch. And I think overall, that's how everything kind of progresses and gets to a better place.
Well, and that's the mark of a true creator, and someone that I really like to collaborate with, which is, I believe that it's definitely attitude over aptitude. And I don't, you know, Richard Avedon, very famous fashion photographer, one of his more repeated quotes was, the best idea often comes from the caterer. And I believe that, Bob, you and I have that in common. There's not a lot of ego involved in decisions creatively. And, you know, I can't wait to get into season five. I cannot wait. And I would love to, you know, unlike prior seasons, I'd love to collaborate more with you, especially as you go into the research phase. I think that, you know, we could probably help out a bit there and maybe have some discussions around those things, and, you know, really bring you more into the pre-production, which we did a little bit on four, but sure. It'd be really cool to make that more, you know, to see how much better we could make it.
Well, I will say, I know I agree, and I hope that that's possible, because, you know, even if you think about last season, again, the edit schedule for season four was, by the time we started putting the seasons together and getting them out the door, was grueling. I mean, there was no time. I don't know if I had a day off between like August and Christmas. It was just every day doing something. So the goal, which this year, season five, the goal was to have all this extra time to put stuff together. But unfortunately, things have changed in that frame, and we'll see where we're at. But yeah. Absolutely. I'm always open to making things as best that we can. And the more people that collaborate on something, I think the better. You know, I'm a solitary person. I'm here in my edit room all by myself most days. So, you know, the current situation hasn't affected me all that much. I'm here. I'm home. I don't go anywhere.
This is a routine. You've been preparing for this.
So it's nice to get opinions from people, because it keeps me in touch with things and makes sure that I am growing, because I could easily just fade away and no one would know.
Well, dude, I mean, I can't thank you enough, and I'm so lucky that the world kind of, I feel so grateful that the world brought us together around this show, which was, you know, kind of a flippant idea that's turned into something very serious, I think, not just for you and me, but for a lot of other people.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's been great. I know last year, even the way things were going, there was a small point where I might not have even been able to work on it. And I can just remember thinking, no, that's not, yeah. I have to. So hopefully, hopefully that continues. But I would have been heartbroken at this point. It's like these become, I'm sure you feel the same way. These are our babies. You know, we do put a lot of blood, sweat, and tear in these things. And it's, you know, it's important that people see them, whether they like them or not. This is like they see them.
I'm going to, as soon as I get off the phone, I'm going to call my lawyer and tell him to adjust the contract that I'm not going to shoot it if Bob's not going to edit it. That's not happening. It's not, dude. There's no way I'm going to just give it. There was one episode that I think we passed off once or something, didn't we?
There were over the, in season three, I think there were a couple episodes we passed off. But again, me being me, I had to go through and I probably, if the original editors watched them eventually when they did come out, they were probably pissed because things changed, you know, but that's part of the process. Hopefully they're not blaming me. Hopefully they think, oh, well, yeah, sure. The whole production team got together and made these choices.
Yeah.
But, you know, I had already been doing it for a while. I knew how things should look and how they should feel. And sometimes you have to go in and, you know, I guess that's the executive producer part of things. You sort of have to go in there and make sure they make sense because it would stick out like a sore thumb. People would recognize it. We get called out on everything online. Everything.
Oh, yeah.
So we have to do what we can to make sure at least the things we can control, you know, make sense.
Well, look forward to season 5 with you, Bob. Thank you so much.
Thank you. This was great.
That was good.